from their metal weapons, fire spouting from their tips. She was almost trampled by a horse, but managed to grab a dropped spear and use it to cause the beast to rear, toppling its rider from its back. The man rolled over and found his feet, glaring at her.
"You,"
he said. A rush rolled through her as Rhea saw who it was. Her original capturer, the general of Susa, who had killed Nod and nearly killed she and Gaia. She remembered when he had knocked her unconscious. She remembered his threats. And she remembered her own. "I will kill this man." But that threat had been empty, and she was a woman with child on a battlefield full of seasoned warriors, including this man.
"Please,"
she said, dropping the spear. He stalked toward her, fingering the edge of the blade strapped to his wrist. "I don't care who you are. Bane is a fool. But do not fear. I am no monster. I will make it quick." As he leapt into the air, Rhea thought, "So shall I," dropping to a crouch and snatching up the spear which she thrust into the air, bracing for the impact. The man's eyes widened and he tried to change his trajectory, but it was already too late, the tip piercing his breast just over his heart. The spear snapped from the impact, and Rhea toppled over backwards. The man's body thudded beside her, his eyes trained on hers, staring without sight. She didn't wait around, shoving to her feet, racing onwards. She tripped over a fallen soldier, or what was left of him. He'd been the victim of one of the many explosions. A blade was strapped to his wrist, which lay in a pool of blood. Rhea scrambled over and worked at the knots, while soldiers stampeded past her. The blade tore free, and Rhea grasped it as she stood. A wave of dizziness crashed over her, and she almost fell. It was all too much. The heat, the battle, the nausea.
"No,"
she growled out loud.
"I am Rhea Loren, first of my name. I have conquered the North. I have summoned a monster of the deep. I have survived too much to give in now."
She gritted her teeth and waited for the vertigo to subside, taking one cautious step forward, then another. Well, not forward, but back, swimming upstream against the tide of Phoenicians. They ignored her, intent on meeting the army to the south. Soon she was alone, the last of the rearguard passing her. The shouts faded. The echoes of explosions became distant thunder.
"My child is safe. There is still hope."
The sound of marching footsteps arose from the desert beyond the mouth of the canyon. And she knew. She knew. The West-East Alliance had arrived. Rhea could have run, but she did not. She stood, facing their perfect, unbroken lines without fear. She'd been the one to bring them here, after all. The two armies shared the front lines in equal measure. On the left was the Western infantry, their flag-bearers holding the rearing stallion high with pride. The red-clad Furia were among them, many of the women with scarred faces that matched Rhea's own. On the right marched the Easterners, a mix of Aurean and human legionnaires, their armor pristine and gleaming. Rhea searched the crowd for familiar faces. Sai, Gareth.
"Ennis, are you here? Do you still hate me?"
She hoped he did. It was what she deserved. But the soldiers were a nondescript blur of grey and steel, one face blending into the next. A command was issued and they stopped, their chins held high, their stances identical. They stared at her. There was a commotion, and the lines broke as a man burst through the lines, running toward her.
"Ennis!"
She wanted to scream, but she held her tongue when she saw the expression he wore. Anger. Vengeance. She didn't move, waiting. Another gave chase behind him, and Rhea's breath caught. He wasn't her defender, but still, she'd longed to meet the King of the East under different circumstances. Gareth Ironclad shouted something at Ennis, but her cousin ignored him, closing the distance with long strides, his sword churning at his side. She didn't move, though she could feel tears pricking her eyes.
"I should let him kill me."
If it was only her, then she would let him, allow poetic justice to take its course. But it wasn't just her. Her love for her unborn child trumped justice and revenge and the myriad other emotions spiraling from her cousin's sprinting form. She raised the dagger stolen from a corpse. And then Ennis was upon her, slashing down hard, not pulling the blow. She barely managed to block it, but the dagger flew from her fingers as she fell back. A swatch of her dirty clothes fluttered to the ground beside her. She had determination and a fierce protectiveness for her babe, but he was a career soldier, and there was no element of surprise. He knew all her tricks, what she was capable of. The fight was over before it had begun. His jaw was tensed, his mouth a line of indifference. The tip of his sword pressed to her neck.
"I loved you," he said,
and she could see the unshed tears in his eyes.
"I'm sorry," she said,
and for the first time in her life, she thought she meant those two words. Not just on their face, but in the core of her soul. They needed to be said 1,000 more times to 1,000 more people for them to count. Her biggest regret was that she wouldn't have the chance.
"It's too late for sorry," Ennis said, his lips quivering. "I know," Rhea said,
her eyes never leaving his, even as the corner of her vision saw Gareth skid to a stop.
"Ennis, don't," he said. "You don't want her blood on your hands."
Ennis's head half turned toward the Eastern King, once Rhea's captor.
"You're defending her? She imprisoned you. She murdered her own cousin, her sister. So much blood on her hands. And the lies. It has all been a lie."
Gareth said, "I know. But I saw her do something different. I saw a different side of her. I know you've seen it, too. And the child is innocent. Don't punish the child for the sins of its mother." Every word was like a slap, even the good ones, for she didn't deserve them. Ennis's grip tightened on his sword.
"I won't fault you," she said,
staring into his eyes.
"I could never fault you. Not anymore."
It wasn't an attempt to save her own life, nor her child's. Finally, she felt stripped of everything, as naked as the day she was born. She felt nothing. She felt everything. She saw the moment of decision flash before his eyes, and she closed her own. Steel slashed down. The sound was louder than she expected, blade cutting through hard bone. She gasped, her eyes flashing open. She felt nothing, but couldn't breathe, couldn't breathe, couldn't
go, Ennis said. "Sai would imprison you, but even that is too good for you. If you survive this battle, you can choose your own path. Don't waste it as you have before."
Rhea stared at him, not understanding a single word.
"Go!"
Ennis screamed, grabbing his sword and wrenching it from the earth into which he'd stabbed it.
"I'm alive."
Rhea fought the size of her belly and gravity, and shoved to her feet. She turned and ran back toward the battle, leaving the dagger behind. 78. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Jai Jaru. Jai wasn't a violent person by nature, but something had snapped in him. His father's murder, his mother's disappearance, years of watching the oppression of the Terran people. His failed alliance with the Black Tears, his own time as a slave, his escape, his second chance. The King's Bane using the Phoenicians in a bid to rule the Four Kingdoms. He fought like a dragon, countering the aerial assaults of the Fenru masters with his own mastery of Fenlu. After each defensive maneuver, he'd go on the offensive, wounding or killing his foes. From time to time he'd spot one of the Black Tears fighting, but with the grace of Fen Sir, the womanly dance transformed into something deadly. Sonica, Shanti, others, their Black Tears appearing to drip from their cheeks as they moved. The Terrans fought hard too, relying on strength of will where their training fell short. But it wasn't enough. Jai fought back revulsion as the bodies piled up on both sides. He was forced to step over them, around them, or on top of them. The latter path turned his stomach. This was necessary. This evil. Rebellions were bloody in their nature. Those who died would save the rest. He had to believe that. A Phoenician soldier leapt from the side, twisting in mid-air, the blade strapped to his ankles, flashing silver. Jai raised his blade and warded off one blow, two, falling into perfect stance naturally. The man died too easily. Still, they were losing, badly, outnumbered and outfought. But then Jai saw him, the man at the core of it all. Everything else seemed to disappear as he stalked toward Bane, who was slowly drawing his dagger out of a Terran man's chest. There was something strange about his movements. He looked out of breath. He's tired, exhausted even. I can end this. He didn't care that Bane's back was to him, or that it was a craven way to kill. This murderer deserved nothing less. Yes, he'd killed the slave master, Vin Hosa, but he was now killing Jai's people, his friends. He closed in, raising his sword, aiming his strike for the center of Bane's dark cloak to sever his spine. As if sensing the attack, Bane spun at the last moment, moving unnaturally fast, blocking the strike with the edge of his dagger, raking it across Jai's hand, cutting deep. Jai dropped his weapon, but managed to snatch it from mid-air with the other hand, taking two quick steps back as Bane tried to strike again. He moves like the wind, he thought, parrying another two slashes. He should be winning, his weapon superior, but the power of Bane's mark, burning like a torch on his scalp, more than even the odds. Jai danced back again, and Bane stopped suddenly, his chest heaving.
"It's Hosa I want," he said. "Leave now, and I'll spare you."
Jai had his disagreements with the Emperor, but he didn't have to think before answering. "No." His justice mark pulsed in agreement, but Jai refused to focus on it, fearing it would call to the slave soldiers again. "I won't force them to fight. Not any more." "Yes." The word wasn't spoken by Bane, but from behind Jai. His heart sank when he turned and saw Falcon approaching. His leather armor was splattered with blood, his sword stained crimson. All around him the battle raged on, but it felt like they were in a bubble apart from the others.
"I will fight, Bane. It is my duty."
"No," Jai said again. "Fanes will need you to rebuild. You united the people. No one else could have done that."
"Touching," Bane said, stepping forward. "Why don't I just kill you both?"
With that, he leapt forward. Jai caught the blow on the leather armor, protecting his forearm, sweeping his leg around Bane's knee. He was already gone, leaving Jai to catch nothing but air. Falcon cried out, and Jai whirled. The Emperor's blade was flush with Bane's, each pressing hard. Bane was winning, finally thrusting him back and advancing as Falcon stumbled over a body lying behind him. Jai launched himself forward, sprinting, leaping another body, diving hard, bringing his sword to bear. Bane's dagger clanked against his weapon, his shoulder crashing into his jaw. They went down in a heap, Jai landing on Falcon, Bane on Jai. Their faces were pressed tightly together, and this close, Jai could clearly see the weariness in his foe's eyes. His face was so pale he might have been a ghost, save for the dark, bruise-like spots on his cheek. His eyes were bloodshot, like he hadn't slept a night in his life. Jai barely felt the blade, so clean was the cut. All he felt was a liquid warmth beneath his armor, spilling down his body.
"Falcon," he croaked, "go to the army. Tell them what you have seen. You have to persuade them to make the right choice."
Jai felt the Emperor scramble out from underneath him, hesitating. Jai craned his head back to look at him, upside down.
"Go! My life is forfeit."
The Emperor hesitated, his lips knitting together. But then he nodded, turned, and raced away. Bane shoved the blade in further, and Jai screamed, his eyes falling back on his foe. Bane didn't look satisfied, or victorious, or full of bloodlust. No, the one who was death-marked looked only sad.
"This man is misunderstood. Perhaps even he doesn't know why he does what he does."
The realization changed everything. If Jai had understood earlier, perhaps he could have done things differently. But it was too late for that.
"Find your peace," Jai said.
Bane cocked his head to the side.
"You don't hate me?"
Jai shook his head. feeling a trickle of blood spill from the corner of his mouth. Warmth flowed from his heel, seeming to pool beneath him. Confusion spread across Bane's face, even as Jai felt his body weakening. A sound came from a faraway place, a scream. He let his head flop to the side, and he saw her, running toward him. Shanti Parthena Lord. His peaceful maiden of highest honor. His love. His soul. Leaving her behind would be his greatest sadness. With the last of the strength he had left, he turned to look at Bane once more. "Don't hurt her. Please. Don't hurt her." Bane nodded once, and then was gone. Shanti dropped to his side on her knees, tears already spilling from her eyes.
"Jai, we have to get you to a healer. Can you walk?"
Jai couldn't even shake his head. Everything was fuzzy around the edges, fading. But not her. Never her. Shanti was as clear and bright as the sun on a cloudless day, her beauty not of this world.
"I..."
The words stuck in his throat, drowning in blood. He spat to the side.
"Shh! Don't speak!"
Her hand caressed his cheek, a breath of wind on a sweltering day. None could stay his tongue, not even her.
"I love you." That warmth.
He knew the power of his mark was flowing back toward the army, not to force them to fight again, but to bring them the news of his death.
"I die for them," he thought. "I die for all of them."
Before Jai Jaru died, he heard a cry rise up. It wasn't the cry of an army of mindless slaves. No, it was the cry of those who chose to march to war. And it felt like justice, at long last. 79. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Falcon Hosa. Falcon hadn't needed to do anything. It was like a bowstring had been released, the slave army releasing a roar that sent shivers down his spine. And he knew. Jai Jaru was dead. Somehow his death had snapped the soldiers out of their confusion, sending them back into action. The sadness he felt was dwarfed only by the thrill of watching 10,000 soldiers trained from birth marching into battle. There were others amidst them, too, rugged-looking men and women wearing not leathers but salt-stained linens, as if they'd just walked out of the sea. He would have thought they were pirates if he didn't know better. There were no pirates in Fanes. One of them had a blade for a hand, the weapon glinting at his side as he ran into battle. "This is it," Falcon thought. "The end of an era, and the beginning of a new one." Slaves were fighting alongside former masters and generals. Rebels were allied with oppressors. Masters of Fen-Sir joined masters of Fen-Ru and Fen-Lu. Even a group resembling pirates were somehow involved. "We cannot waste Jai's sacrifice," Falcon thought, as he swiveled around and sprinted amongst them. The Phoenicians were falling on all sides, cut down like stalks of tall grass, trampled underfoot. Falcon met a stalwart, leather-clad soldier who stood in his path. The man was quick, flashing a bladed kick that would have opened Falcon's neck had he been a hair slower. Instead, he threw his head back and the razor whistled past his chin. He followed through, springing backwards on his hands, and then ducking a slash, bringing his own blade up into his foe's sternum. The breath left the man's lungs, and he doubled over, clutching his chest. One of the pirates came out of nowhere and removed the man's head from his shoulders. Falcon nodded to him, and she nodded back, a dark look in her eyes. They turned away from each other and ran onwards. Falcon didn't meet another enemy, the Phoenicians having retreated further into the canyons, pursued by the rebels. "The day is won," Falcon thought, feeling a swell of jubilation rolling around the melancholy that had set in. "We have won." It was like something out of one of his books, something impossible, remarkable. In his world there were no happy endings. The villains won. The villains thrived. "Not any more," he thought. "This is a brave new world." He saw the slender but strong form of a Terran woman kneeling on the ground, weeping, and every thought of victory or change or new beginnings was shattered. It was Shanti. Jai's unmoving body lay before her, catching her tears. Falcon started toward her, but stopped when a sound arose. Trumpets blared from somewhere deep beyond the canyons. 80. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Grey Aris. The addictive mix of fear and excitement that battle brought was something Grey knew he might never get sick of. And thus far, he hadn't lost a single man or woman, the enemy routed. Slavers, he thought with disgust as he ran on. He drew even more comfort in the knowledge that his sister and Eric were well behind them, safe at the rear of the rebel army. He even spotted Kyla separating one of the Phoenicians' heads from his neck. He felt a slash of gruesome pride watching her fight. Grey had killed his share of the enemy, too, ignoring the flare of their flips and spins, waiting for his opportunity to stab them somewhere fatal. Eventually, however, there was no one left to fight, the enemy in full retreat. Still, he gave chase, determined to help end as many of the Phoenicians as possible, so they would be unable to mount a counterattack. When he heard the horns, he slowed to a jog, then a walk, then stopped completely. All around him, the soldiers and pirates did the same, staring at the retreating enemy, wondering what had caused the sound. The Phoenicians stopped, too, whirling around, running back toward them. What the hell? They saw the rebels and stopped again. Their eyes darted from one end of the canyon to the other, and Grey could see the fear in their eyes. A cry arose, and Grey could see them now, banners flapping in the hot breeze. Westerners, he thought, seeing the rearing stallion sigil. Wait, there were other flags too, bearing the crossed iron swords. Easterners. A chill ran through him. An East-West alliance? Impossible. But he could not deny his eyes, could not deny the gleaming armor and razor-edged lines of the raised swords as they marched, blocking the Phoenicians' retreat. Their enemy was caught between the fire and the flame. Kyla appeared beside him. What do we do? She asked. Grey said, kill any Phoenicians who try to escape this way. And the others? I don't know, he said. We wait and see, I guess. They are not the enemy. Not yet. She nodded, gripping her sword tightly. Grey spotted movement along the canyon wall, something that was out of place amongst the soldiers. He squinted, watching as a form skirted the edge, taking shelter in the shadows. There was a flash of gold, there and gone. There was something awkward about the way the person moved. Wobbly. The woman, because it was clear she was a woman now, emerged from the shadows and was struck by a ray of sunlight sneaking past the canyon walls. There was something about her face. Grey's breath caught in his lungs. His mouth went dry. His eyes widened. It cannot be. It cannot. It was. Though now marred by glistening scars, there was no mistaking her soft porcelain features, nor her golden hair, though it had been partially hacked off unevenly. Even without her beautiful, pristine dress, which was replaced by filthy, tattered rags, she was unmistakable, as undeniable as a shard of glass poking from a bed of moss. Rhea Loren. He didn't think, just acted, taking off at a sprint toward her, the way blocked by what was left of the Phoenician army. Rhea. She had nothing left. Her legs like lead, her swollen belly an immense weight, dragging her down like an anchor. The only solace she could take was that the Phoenicians had been defeated. Bane had lost. Yet even that thought felt empty. Ennis had not killed her, but he might as well have. His contempt for her a dagger to the heart. Stop it. Focus on what matters. You must beg for your child's life if it comes to it. You cannot fail. Clutching the side of the rock wall for support, Rhea watched the Phoenicians. They were standing back to back, awaiting the enemies on both sides, their final stand. Something else caught her gaze. A man running, breaking away from the rest of the rebel army, who were also giving chase. He had dark, unkempt hair and a handsome, boyish face. He was strong, that much was clear, in the taut lines of his arms, shoulders, chest. He was missing a hand. Something glinted in its place. A blade. Rhea leaned forward, her palms sweating, a sob choking from the back of her throat. Grey Aris plunged into the midst of the Phoenicians, shoving, slashing, fighting his way toward her. Their eyes met, and it was like he'd never left. Grey. These men were nothing but pathetic obstacles in Grey's path. He thought he took a slash across his shoulder, perhaps one along his abdomen too, but he felt nothing but a brief flash of pain, his adrenaline drowning out all else. He saw the recognition in her eyes as she spotted him, felt it reflected in his own gaze. She knows who I am. Only one soldier remained between him and her. Grey parried a strike on his blade hand, shoving the man away as he streaked past. The space between them was insurmountable, a chasm too great to cross. Or is it? What am I doing? He knew, but couldn't think it, didn't want to think it, because the implications were too much for him to swallow, like trying to choke down an entire apple without chewing. Somewhere along the lines, his subconscious had unblocked what was the most different about her. Not the scars, nor the short hair, even if the rest of his brain pretended not to notice. Rhea is pregnant, he thought. Not just with child, but very with child, her belly protruding in such a way that Grey thought it could not possibly grow any bigger. Though it was possible she'd been with another man since that fateful night in the Cryptlands, something told him she hadn't, which meant the unborn child was his. Rhea, he said, stopping at the edge of that chasm. The warmth of blood flowed down his arm, his stomach. You're hurt, Grey, Rhea said. I always have been. This wasn't real. Couldn't be real. Was real. Your face, he said, reaching out to touch her, his hand stopping short of her cheeks. They cut me. The Furia. The realization felt like a fresh wound. He'd never considered what harm their relationship could have for her. They cut her because of me. Because of what we had, what we did. Oh, Rhea. I'm sorry. I saw what Rathos did to you. I never intended that. I summoned the monster to protect my people, but I lost control. I was a fool for thinking I could control it. There was something broken in her expression, something he'd only seen once before, on the night her father died and Shay was abducted by the Furia. He'd been that way once, long ago. Not ever again. I understand. I'm sorry, too. I saw you, too. You were so brave. Somewhere, a battle continued to rage. It might have been 1,000 miles away, 1,000,000. He knew he should have felt a level of subconscious fear at seeing the Furia again, the ones who took his hand, but they were insubstantial next to the woman before him. Are you hurt? Grey asked. She shook her head, her hands absently rubbing her belly. How are you here? A breathy laugh stretched its wings from her lips. You wouldn't believe me if I told you. I'm guessing you could say the same. He couldn't hold back the smile. It was true. She probably wouldn't. Your child, he said, gesturing to her stomach. Her eyes never left his. What do you want me to say? The truth? Just tell me the truth. Grey? A voice said from behind him before she could answer. Grey turned to find Kyla standing, sword in hand, fresh blood dripping from the blade. Beyond her, the last of the Phoenicians were being corralled, their weapons dropped as they surrendered. Pirates, rebels, Easterners and Westerners, both soldiers and Furia, Orians and humans swarmed them. Grey felt a pit form in his stomach. Kyla had been so much to him, everything to him. She still was, in a lot of ways. She'd saved him when he was lost, and he knew he had saved her, too. But he couldn't deny what he felt for Rhea, especially because of the unspoken truth he'd seen in her eyes. The child is yours. Kyla's eyes had darkened, and he remembered her threat from before.
"If I meet her, I will kill her."
Gray said nothing, could not fathom what to say, which was exactly the wrong thing. Kyla spun on her heel and strode away. Gray knew he should go after her, but his legs wouldn't move. He turned back to Rhea to find tears streaking down her cheeks.
"You should go. I'm not worthy of any of this. I'm not worthy of you. Whoever that woman is, she is."
"That's for me to decide," Gray said. He took a step forward, but then stopped. He shook his head, scanning the canyon from one wall to the other. He frowned, trying to puzzle out something in his mind. Something was strange. For one, the blare of trumpets had seemed to come from too far away, and it hadn't echoed the way sound seemed to travel through the canyons. Plus, amongst the East and Western Army, he couldn't seem to locate a single trumpet. "Another army is coming," he thought, though he wasn't certain how that was possible.
"Gray," another voice said,
and his heart sank as he turned toward his sister. Shay sat in the cart with Eric, their hands clasped.
"What?"
Her eyes darted between Gray and Rhea, then back to Gray.
"She is here."
"Who?"
"Our purpose. The Keeper of Souls. And she brings death to us all."
81. The Southern Empire. The Bloody Canyons. Lisbeth Lorne. The knights didn't run. They didn't need to. None could escape their fury. Instead, they stalked forward into the canyons. Lisbeth and Sir Dietrich walked amongst them, unspeaking. Lisbeth sensed she had a role to play in what would transpire, but not yet. The trumpets no longer blared. As the knights had swarmed through the Phoenician war city, one brave boy with a dead woman at his feet had lifted the instrument to his lips and blown with all his might. 3 long blasts. A warning to those who marched into the canyons before them. Death ended the sound. Hemptown was now a city of corpses. Shadows grew before them as the canyon walls rose on all sides. Far in the distance, between stone and sand, Lisbeth could make out an army of souls of many colors, greens, reds, blues, oranges, a kaleidoscope of life, like a twisting, writhing flame the moment before it is snuffed out.
"I must fight them."
It scared her, for she knew she would lose. But she also knew that it wasn't about victory. It was about showing up. Standing tall, trying.
"I will try."
"You should go," Lisbeth said to Sir Dietrich. "Once I am gone, I can no longer protect you."
His blue soul darkened slightly.
"Who said I need protecting? Anyway, you are going nowhere."
She wanted to stop him, but could see the steely determination swirling through his soul like a dust storm.
"Thank you for not abandoning me."
"Never." They walked on, the rainbow of souls growing ever closer. They were turning now, confusion flashing. Others piled behind them, different. Another army, and another. There were disparate groups of souls, too, each with their own features, some rugged, some polished. Armies amongst armies, a ragtag assortment of peoples united in battle. They outnumbered the ancient knights 100-1.
"It will not be enough,"
Lisbeth knew. The knights roared as one, a battle cry that would torment their enemies' minds, infiltrate their souls. They lifted their weapons, swords stained crimson from their bloody march south. Lisbeth gripped Sir Dietrich's hand and said,
"It is time."
His blue soul never wavered. "I will do what I can." And then he fell amongst the knights from behind, his sword flashing. Gareth.
"What is this new evil?"
Gareth thought, watching the massive knights approach. Their armor and swords were splattered with blood, still oozing from the edges, painting a bloody path behind them. It took his mind off Rhea, who he'd seen conferring with a rugged-looking man near the edge of the canyon wall. He exchanged a look with Ennis, who only shook his head. Gareth recalled the tale of the Easterner's defeat in Darin, how a large company of powerful knights had marched in and decimated their forces, plucking victory from the hands of defeat for the Northerners. And the crisis in Bethany he'd heard rumours of. Were these knights the cause? Something about them was otherworldly, though he couldn't discern what. "We have the numbers," Gareth thought, even as Cy Loren gave the command to attack. The two forces, the Easterners and Westerners running, the knights striding, met in a frightening clang of steel. Dozens of men and women fell. Gareth watched an Orion he knew to be a formidable warrior get cut down like he was made of wind. Two Furia fell at the hands of one foe. The knights moved through them like reapers harvesting crops, hacking and slashing. Their armour repelled all attacks, their swords separating skin and bone and muscle like rolled sheaves of parchment. Gareth raised his sword, and Ennis did the same. One knight slashed down three soldiers in front of him, moving toward them with a confidence beyond that of the fiercest warriors Gareth had ever seen. Steel flashed, and Gareth narrowly danced away, not even attempting to parry the powerful blow. Ennis wasn't so lucky, slamming his sword hard against the knight's shoulder, to no avail, then taking a heavy boot to the chest that rocked him back, leaving him gasping. Gareth took advantage of the distraction to attack from behind, but the knight spun faster than he thought possible, catching him with an elbow to the jaw, snapping his head around. He barely managed to hang on to his sword, which he brought up as he came out of the spin, blocking a strike so strong his own blade smashed against his chest plate. "We are all dead," he thought. It wouldn't matter if they had 20,000, 100,000. These knights were unbeatable. Still, he tried to roll away, only to feel the breath punched out of him when the knight's boot came crashing down on his chest. A drop of blood fell from the sword as the knight raised it in a final killing stroke. It splashed on Gareth's face, followed by a shadow. "Holy Orion," he thought. The dragon shrieked as it flew overhead, its red scales shimmering under the sun, its spiked tail sweeping back and forth as its leathery wings beat the air. The knight's sword stopped as he craned his neck skyward, making a slight grunting noise. That's when something dropped from the dragon's back, something metallic, like a suit of armour. It spun once, twice, and Gareth could see the legs now, windmilling, preparing to catch the side of the steep cliff as she fell, for Gareth now knew it was a person and a she, because he knew exactly who this was, even if her presence was impossible, because she hated dragons. She hates dragons! But then she ran down the face of the cliff and leapt at the last moment, landing just before where he lay pinned on the ground. She grinned, her cat-like eyes gleaming. "Miss me?" Gwendolyn Storm said. Gwen. The flight from Calypso had been less harrowing than she'd expected. "Maybe I'm getting used to riding Dragonback," Gwen had thought as they'd soared over the fiery waters of the burning sea. Then had come the crimson-painted peaks of the Red Rocks and, finally, the Bloody Canyons. Viper Sands had admitted to everything in exchange for her own life. How she'd plotted against the Empire from the moment her sister won the throne. How she'd ignored the Phoenician rebels' request for help. How, even now, there was a war being fought between the slavers and the rebels. To Gwen's surprise, Raven hadn't hesitated to agree when she'd suggested they fly to Fane's to help. The reinstated Empress had put Whisper in charge while they were gone. Goggin would reorganize the palace guard. But none of that knowledge had prepared Gwen for what they'd found between the shoulders of the cliffs. Her hero mark had pulsed, magnifying her vision like twin spyglasses. She'd seen multiple armies from all different races and nations. Though she knew of Gareth's alliance with Rhea Loren, she'd never truly believed that Easterners would fight alongside Westerners. Thousands had lost their lives already, and thousands more lives were at stake. The company of knights was the most surprising of all, because they seemed to kill without discretion, falling amongst all the others and slaughtering at will. And then she'd spotted Gareth in a fight for his life. She hadn't thought about whether her hero mark could protect her from a fall this height. Hadn't thought at all, really. She'd just acted. Hearing Raven's protest vanish behind her as she dropped toward the ground, which suddenly seemed a great distance below her. When she landed, her muscles and bones aching slightly, but none the worse for wear, Gwen couldn't help but to offer a cocky line before throwing herself into action. The knight, despite his prowess in battle, clearly didn't expect his enemies to drop from the sky, because she managed to duck under his sword with ease, smashing her shoulder into his midsection and knocking Gareth free from his boot. "Please don't pick me up and throw me anywhere," Gareth said.
"I can't make any promises,"
Gwen said, helping him up as the knight snarled, brandishing his heavy greatsword with ease. Another man appeared on Gareth's opposite side. He was wheezing between clenched teeth, but still managed to grip his own blade.
"Ennis,"
Gwen said, and she couldn't hide the surprise in her voice. She was glad to see him alive.
"Yet another surprise from Rhea Loren," she thought. "Now the party can really begin."
Before Ennis could wheeze out a response, the knight attacked, sweeping his blade low and forcing all three of them to duck. At least that was the natural evasive maneuver one would expect. Gwen, however, liked to surprise her foes. She jumped instead, so high the sword cut the air well beneath her. At the same time, she slung her bow from her back and knocked three arrows to the string, firing them together, aiming for where she suspected the weak spots were in the knight's armor. One slipped through his eye slit, another stuck in the narrow ridge between helmet and breastplate, and the third glanced harmlessly off his chest.
"I'm losing my touch," Gwen thought, as the knight died.
She landed in a crouch next to the still ducking Gareth and Ennis. Raven.
"That mad, mad woman,"
Raven thought, feeling a shred of awe at the same time. Gwendolyn Storm was already on the canyon floor, fighting the knights swarming over the gathered armies. The jump should have killed her, should have killed anyone, but it hadn't.
"But we can be mad, too."
She wheeled Ciri around, sending her into a dive, flames already jetting from her maw. The fire swarmed over a knight who had just killed one of the eastern soldiers. He froze in place as the flames washed over him, and then collapsed, his armor already melting, revealing scorched skin and portions of bone. As Ciri soared over the fray, careful that her wings didn't clip the canyon walls, Raven snapped her whip, catching another knight around the neck, jerking him back. He stumbled over a corpse, and several soldiers managed to land blows across his body, staggering him. He should have been overwhelmed by the attack. He wasn't. As Raven looked back, he regained his feet and cut down his foes one at a time, leaving a circle of death around him. Ciri shrieked, and Raven swiveled to face forward, only to find one of the knight's arms wrapped around the dragon's neck. Somehow, he still managed to grip his blade, which he was using to slowly carve through scale and sinew, muscle and tendon, seeking to sever the beast's head from her body. Such an act should have required the strength of 100 men, and yet this single knight was making progress as Ciri bucked and writhed, trying to dislodge him.
"No,"
Raven breathed, clambering to her feet. She took two big steps and then threw herself on his back, using her momentum to drag him away. She hit the hard ground on her side, a shockwave shuddering through her injured arm. More bones cracked and snapped. Spots danced before her eyes as she rolled. Images flashed, too. Ciri's body twisting, one of her wings slashed open, air pouring through. Another of the knights clinging to the sheet of severed skin, hacking away. The dragon's eyes full of fear as she came down, crash-landing, her powerful body ending the lives of friends and foes alike. As her dragon, her soul, her friend, came to a stop, several knights stalked toward her. Blinded by pain, rage, and fear, Raven dragged her broken body to its feet. Though she'd only just regained her empire, that didn't matter now. She would die for her soul, just as she knew Ciri would die for her.
Lisbeth.
Lisbeth was falling again, the chasm of black souls opening wide to swallow her.
"Join us," they screamed, excited in their bloodlust, in their work of death.
"Never,"
she growled back, pressing against the wall of steel, searching for weaknesses.
"This is your last chance. We have spared you because you set us free, but you are fast becoming our enemy. Join us now or die."
She ignored them, sending her soul out again, probing, finding several tiny cracks in the wall. Her soul filled them, trying to widen them. Pain streaked through her, and she screamed. Abruptly, she was aware of blue flames dancing across her vision.
"Lisbeth! Lisbeth!"
Sir Dietrich's arms encircled her, and she relished their warmth, their strength, adding to her own. She could feel the answer to all her failures in the marrow of her bones, deep in her soul, a knowledge so true it was more faith than wisdom. She spoke to him in the place between whispers.
"My life is forfeit," she said. "This is what I was born for, to stop them. But it will cost me my life."
There was no sadness in her tone, only certainty. Dietrich's lips were soft against her cheek, a contrast to the rough stubble on his face. She could feel her own soul reaching for his, wanting nothing more than to melt into it. Concentrating, she reined it in.
"No one is born to die," he said. "I was. I am. This is my purpose. Otherwise, I am a husk."
"No, please. We can fight them together. We can do this."
His voice was tight, but the fight had left him. He knew, too.
"I'm sorry, sir. I might have loved you if we had more time."
The truth on her lips hurt more than anything else. His blue soul was streaked with red now.
"I do love you, Lisbeth. I've known it from the moment I met you."
The truth in his words was torture.
"Don't say that."
"I can hold back the truth no longer."
She gasped as the dark souls clutched her once more, ripping her away from the blue soul. She shouted from the depths.
"Promise me. You won't let me go. Promise me."
His words were spoken through the wall of souls.
"I promise."
Agony tearing through her once more. She shoved back against the wall with everything she had left. Grey. Grey didn't know what was happening, not exactly. There were knights and soldiers and Furia, and then a dragon had crashed into the canyon. Thankfully, he had his sister with him to navigate this new world, to focus his energy.
"You must protect us," she said.
He didn't need further urging. He would die for her. Eric, too, he realized. And Rhea. He scanned the fray for Kyla, but couldn't find her. He feared for her, hating himself for not having the words she needed before. One of the knights broke through the lines and strode toward them. Grey raised his blade hand, immediately knowing it wouldn't be enough, not nearly enough. But then Rhea was at his side, raising a blade he didn't even know she had. Even still, the blow knocked them back toward Shay and Eric.
"I must buy them time," Grey thought, straining against the strength of his foe.
Rhea was grunting. He glanced back to find Shay's and Eric's eyes rolled back, their bodies convulsing as light streamed from their clasped hands. The knight's eyes widened as he looked over Grey's head, seeming to realize something. He drew his blade back and struck again, more frantically now, but Grey and Rhea managed to repel the attack once more. But he was certain the next blow would break them. And then there were more people with them, an Eastern soldier with striking good looks and a slight curl to his lip.
"Gareth?"
Rhea said. Another. A Westerner with Rhea's chin and eyes, but taller.
"Ennis?"
Finally, an armor-clad Orion, her hair as silver as a longsword.
"Gwendolyn?"
Together they blocked the night strikes, holding him at bay. The Furia joined in, and Grey felt an icicle of fear trickle down his spine. "They can't hurt you any more," he reminded himself, and the feeling dissipated. Pirates joined in, forming a circle around the cart. To Grey's relief, Kyla was there, though her eyes refused to meet his as she fought. Terran soldiers followed, and then Phoenicians and the warrior women with the black tears tattooed on their faces. Knights threw themselves against them, still killing. But fresh defenders continued to replace those that fell, holding the knights at bay, creating a human wall of protection in front of the two half-marked. Light poured from Shay's and Eric's hands now, a column that rose all the way to the sky. "Something is happening," Grey thought, as blades of light began to streak down like falling stars. Lisbeth. Her strength wasn't enough. As had happened each time she'd faced the Night Souls before, they were too strong. Instead of allowing them to dispel her, however, this time she continued to strain, refusing to back down. Blue flames flickered on the edge of her vision, the knowledge that Dietrich was still with her, sustaining her, even as pain roared through her. She felt the warmth of blood sheeting over her skin. It sprung from every pore like sweat. Her veins could not contain the stress on her body, which felt like it was stretching, beginning to tear apart.
"It is done," Lisbeth thought,
throwing herself at the wall one final time, prepared to dash her soul against them in an explosion of whatever strength she had left.
"Wait. We are here. Take our strength for your own."
Lisbeth's entire body jerked at the voice.
"No," she thought. "Voices."
For there were two, one male and one female. She could feel their light shining nearby, and then it was falling across her, bright stars feeding her soul, replenishing it, strengthening it. Her pain fell away. The black souls flickered slightly, wavering.
"They are scared," she thought. "They fear the two who bear the light." "Let them fear."
With a scream, she launched her soul at the wall once more. And this time, finally, she broke through. 82. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Rhea Loren. Everyone was dying, but still Rhea battled on. She felt nauseous and exhausted, sweat sheeting from her face. Grey had managed to usher her toward the back, but every once in a while one of the knights would break through and chop at her. She protected her unborn child with every breath. Their numbers were dwindling, but still they fought, protecting the girl, who she recognized as Grey's fate-marked sister, and the one-legged man. The bright light continued to pour from their clasped hands, shooting into the sky. Rhea didn't understand the purpose exactly, but it felt like everything. Their one last chance. Another soldier fell before her, his throat opened. Grey blocked the knight's next strike, but was then shoved away, leaving her exposed. Rhea brought her dagger up, but she felt so weak, utterly spent. The knight slapped her weapon away with his sword and she lost her grip. She turned to try to run, but tripped on a body. There was no slow build-up like she expected, where the knight's sword would hover over her, preparing to be brought down, to end two lives with one stroke. The slash was quick and true, scraping across her stomach before she could attempt to dodge it. Shocked, she stared down at her round belly, which was now bare, protruding like a pale hill where her tattered clothes had been shredded by the blade.
"He missed," she thought in disbelief. How could he have sliced her clothes without breaching her skin?
And then he was screaming. His large, gauntleted fists dropped his sword and, scraping at his helmet, pulling it off, revealing a face as old as time, his eyes sunken craters, his mouth open. Abruptly, his scream cut off, though his mouth remained open, his grey teeth clacking together.
"What is happening?"
He dropped to his knees, his armour rattling. His skin was cracking now, peeling away, crumbling. One of his arms fell from its socket, shattering into a thousand pieces when it landed. Then another. His eyes popped out. His nose broke off. His head fell from his shoulders. He was like a stone statue, devastated by time and weather, falling into ruin. He was dead. Rhea looked about her, seeing the truth. All the other knights had met the same demise, crumbling to pieces while the defenders watched, dumbfounded.
"It is over. Oh, Roth, it is over. My child."
Her eyes found Grey, who was equally wide-eyed, fighting back to his feet, using his blade hand like a cane. He met her gaze and his mouth opened. He shook his head, horrified by something he saw. Something he saw in her.
"Wait. Wait."
He wasn't looking at her face. Not anymore. She felt something warm down below. Rhea looked down to find her belly slashed open, blood pouring from the wound, pooling in her lap. Then came the pain, She threw her head back and screamed, seeing nothing but the edge of the cliffs and the form that was silhouetted against the light.
83. The Southern Empire, the Bloody Canyons. Rhone Lorraine. The entire journey north had felt right, purposeful. Yes, he'd been shocked to learn that the Western Oracle had created a great evil, the very same that was now threatening the Four Kingdoms. But he couldn't change that now. All he could decide was what he did next. They'd found Condor and the other Terrans waiting for them on the plains. Rhone had told them nothing, only that they needed to return to their ship as soon as possible. The jaunt through the jungle had been swifter this time. Even Windy managed to suppress her intellectual curiosity for the sake of haste. Condor had bid them farewell and safe travels, asking only that Rhone would keep the location of their hidden village a secret. He'd promised her. Sailing across the burning sea had also been quick, both the tailwinds and currents lending them speed where, according to Windy, there should have been none.
"These are strange winds and currents for this time of year," she'd commented.
Rhone could feel the Oracle's hand in all things now, the good, the bad. He wanted to hate her. Maybe he did, a little. But he could not deny that the things she'd set in motion were an unstoppable force. All he could do now was to use the power he'd been given to help. So when they'd finally made landfall beside a group of ships, what looked to be pirate ships based on their dark, ominous flags, Rhone had disembarked quickly, racing along the edge of the red cliffs, his life mark drawn by something, almost magnetically. Windy and Yeela yelled after him, but he didn't wait, couldn't wait, because something was happening now. He could feel it in his marrow, his blood, his chest. As he'd approached the red-armored canyons, he'd known something horrible had happened. Vultures circled overhead. The enormous carnivorous birds filled the air. Not just a few, or a dozen, but hundreds. They were drawn to death. "Oh, gods, I'm too late," Rhone had thought. He knew he needed a better vantage point, to see if there was anything left for him to do, any purpose, no matter how small, for him to serve. So he'd climbed. The way had grown steeper and steeper, but still he toiled, fighting for every foot up, until he'd mounted the cliff and raced along the edge, scanning the carnage below. Now he felt sick as he stood above it all. Bodies piled upon bodies. Thousands dead. But thousands still moved, some injured, but others whole or whole enough. The battle was over, one side having claimed victory. He spotted a familiar large red-scaled form lying still.
"Ciri, is she?"
The dragon rolled over and shrieked, her pain laid bare in that sound. Others cried out too, asking for help. His life mark beat in his chest. He could feel its desire to heal, to save, but there were too many.
"I will die," he knew. "I will die if I try to save them all."
He wanted to. Oh, how he wanted to. But he could not. The Oracle had started painting this picture, and for whatever reason, she'd chosen him to finish it.
"Peace, Maker,"
a voice said. It was familiar, but different somehow. Sapped of strength. Quivering like a dewdrop in the face of a stiff morning wind. Rhone didn't turn his head as Bane approached. He couldn't look at him, because he knew.
"You did this."
Bane stood beside him.
"You give me too much credit. I am no god. There were many commanders here today."
Rhone knew he was right. He also knew Bane had been right about many things Rhone had been blind to before.
"Why?"
was the only question he had next. Even if he hated them, he understood the Western Oracle's motivations. But Bane remained an enigma. Bane touched Rhone's arm, and he finally turned to meet his stare. His hand was shaking, his eyes darting back and forth. There was something wrong with him, as he'd thought before.
"You're dying," Rhone said.
Instead of answering, Bane looked away and said,
"Killing warmongering rulers was only making things worse. I thought if I ruled the kingdoms myself..."
A gear of truth clicked into place.
"You could force the people into peace."
Bane nodded absently. There was something sad in his expression. Rhone said, "Before, when you tried to convince me to work with you, why didn't you ask me to heal you?"